He's known as tech's turnaround guy. BlackBerry CEO John Chen has spent more than 30 years working in enterprise technology, famously taking the enterprise software maker Sybase from the verge of death to $5.8 billion powerhouse. Now he's taken on what some say is an impossible job, leading BlackBerry's comeback. Can he prove them wrong? And just how did he become the tech industry's fixer? My guest today on Studio 1.0 is BlackBerry CEO John Chen. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Even though you're running BlackBerry in Canada, the Bay Area is where you call home.
Yes.
You technically live here.
I live here. Well, my family live here. So I live all around. But yes, it's our headquarters in Waterloo, Canada.
How much time do you spend here versus Waterloo?
I try to spend about a week, a month in Waterloo. We still have 5,000-6,000 people over there in Canada, in between Waterloo and Mississauga and Ottawa. And we're building a site here in Silicon Valley. So that's, I spend about a week or so, a month here also. And then the rest of the time, I go around the world seeing customers, meeting with analysts, investors, partners, distributors, and so forth. So that's what I do.
And part of the reason you're opening an office here is the talent, right?
Well, part of the reason of opening an office here is so that we could get much closer to all the happening. At Silicon Valley, there are a lot of great ideas. You know, 90% doesn't go anywhere, but the 10% that goes there anywhere becomes Google of the world. So you really have to pay attention to what's happening around in our industry. And so you're not as insular. I'll just focus on your own thing. We have a lot of great technology, but you just can't just say, okay, this is it, this is the universe. So I intend to really broaden it and hire a lot more people here.
And you were born and raised in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your upbringing, your parents.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, I came from a relatively poor beginning because my parents, although my fathers are quite educated, but they were refugee from China. Post-war, kind of where the communists were taking over before the curtain got drawn. So they escaped from Shanghai to Hong Kong.
And you lived in a one-bedroom apartment?
Yeah, we live in a one-bedroom apartment for a long time. You know, we don't even have a dining table, so to speak. You know, they're refugee. So they put two suitcases on top of each other and put a piece of, I guess it's cloth, whatever it is, over it. And that's our dining table.
So what kind of kid were you? What did you want to be when you grew up?
Never thought about anything about what I wanted to be. I mean, I just thought that everybody at the time, by the way, because of the war and because what happened historically to China and so forth, everybody wants their kids to be scientists. That's the Hong Kong way, right? So everybody become an engineer or mathematicians or whatever, you know, doctors and just professionals so that you could have a good life. So I started off doing a lot of math and I like math. So I ended up to be, you know, study engineering and done reasonably well.
You went on to boarding school in Massachusetts.
Yes.
How did that happen? One bedroom apartment, boarding school in Massachusetts.
Yeah, by the time I was thinking of my education, the higher education, my family's already in kind of a middle income family. My father was able to study English at night, accumulate some wealth, and he invested in the silk business. And he said, well, have you thought about what are you gonna study? I said, well, probably engineering. He said, well, Hong Kong isn't really great in engineering. Have you ever thought about going overseas? That's when piqued my interest. And so I wanted to go to Ivy League. Now, if you go to one of those, it enhanced your chances of getting Ivy League quite a bit, a lot of bit, not just quite a bit. So I went to a prep school and...
That must have been quite a transition, Hong Kong to Massachusetts prep
yeah,
school.
Yeah, they went from no snow to lots of snow. It was quite a transition. It was great. It was the best thing that ever happened to me.
So when did you learn how to code?
I actually learned it from high school. Hmm. This is one of those things that a lot of Americans' kid doesn't understand. The resources this country offered are dramatic as compared to every other country around the world. I don't know whether it's still true or not, but when I was in Hong Kong, we were never, I mean, we might have heard of a computer. We had never seen one. We had never touched one.
You never saw a computer until you got to Massachusetts?
No, until it came here. That was the first time I learned how to code. My last year of high school, my first year in the United States.
And you ended up going to the Ivy Leagues.
Yes.
And Brown University.
I went to Brown, yeah.
Electrical engineering?
Yep, electrical engineering. Actually, I started my career as a manufacturing engineer. I started pretty much on the ground floor. And, you know, I went to Caltech for my master's degree. And then I started working for this mainframe company called Burroughs. And my first job was to fix things.
You started your career learning how to fix things. I'm sensing a theme. You worked your way up. 30 years, you became CEO of Sybase. How did you do it? I mean, along the way, what did it take?
I actually like fixing things. And I think it's both a challenge and also an opportunity to learn stuff, because I'm kind of the old school, loyal, stick with it type of person. Today's young people, a little bit more entitlement oriented. You know, when we were growing up, we never thought about that way. I mean, we thought that you have to create opportunity for yourself. I try to go and learn different areas. Like my first job is in doing fixing manufacturing hardware, and then I went into writing software and, you know, helping run factories. So I have done a lot of different things throughout my career.
You took Sybase from a $362 million company on the verge of failure to $5.8 billion. How did you do it?
Well, first of all, you have to have a very good team of people. And I spent a lot of time recruiting that and building that culture. You focus on things that you do well. You focus on value you could add to the market. You stick with it as a long haul. You just build it a step at a time. And at Sybase, we were at the verge. I mean, literally at the verge. And but we came back.
You bet on mobile before mobile was big.
Yeah, I bet on mobile in year 2000. It was funny. I got people calling me, investor calling me, and telling me that the money you have, which is the company money, belongs to them, didn't belong to me, right? And then for me to invest and waste it in areas like the mobile, you know, I might as well dividend it back to them, right? But thank God we did it. You know, at that time, we were kind of stuck at about a $2 billion. Mobile took us to almost six.
What was the hardest thing you had to do at Sybase?
The initial rounds of letting people go, refocusing the company, and being able to convince the remaining employee and the people that you try to recruit that there's a future.
And you eventually sold to SAP.
Yeah, eventually, a long time. What, 13 years later?
You came out of Sybase looking like a hero, and great CEOs, great executives. There's often a myth about them that's sort of boiled down into legend. What is the myth of John Chen, and what is the reality?
I actually think I'm a pretty simple, straightforward kind of guy. I mean, I like working with people. I like focus on objective and results. Most people thought about, what are you, you know, you're doing this and you're taking a company's already dead. To me, it's just, you know, I'm just gonna take it one step at a time and do better every day, and eventually we'll break through. I'm actually a lot more relaxed than most people think.
People are telling you that BlackBerry is already dead.
Yes.
Why did you take this job?
That's a great question. I think I flunk retirement. That's probably the real, I mean, there's a whole bunch of reasons. I mean, I could give you this reason about, oh, being iconic, you know, industry, and, you know, it's a great company and has a lot of technology, therefore I think there's a lot of potential. All that's true. Why? But that doesn't automatically answer the question, why am I doing it? So I started as being the chairman of the company. I was going to find a management team and formulate a strategy. I thought I was a little too old to run around the world and play cowboys, right? But, you know, once I got into it, I find it's hard to just guide without just doing. And we really don't have a lot of time to just, you know, find another team, another person, and think about the strategy and all that. We just kind of have to get it done. So right, wrong, and different, I decided to just become the CEO.
So you're not crazy?
I'm not crazy. I think there's a lot of good potential here. It's not a done deal. But I think we made a lot of progress in the last 6 months. So.
Is this part of your personality? You like to feel needed, like to fix things?
Yeah, that's probably the negative part of my personality. I'm a little paranoid of not being needed and wanted, I guess. No, I think it's important to what I do every day. I know that it means something to people.
History has been cruel to phone makers. Nokia, Motorola, Palm. What makes you think you can change history?
Well, by not following the same play. We're trying to broaden ourselves way beyond just a device, just a phone. I mean, I don't sit there and think, oh, you know, I could make another really great phone and somehow everything will be well.
But you did vow to keep making phones.
Oh, yes, of course. This is part of our strategy of end-to-end mobile computing for the enterprise. I mean, you can say, well, no, I am so committed that even if I lost my shirt, I'm going to do this. And it just doesn't make any sense. But I think I could make money on the phone. And I hope that by now the industry realized what I'm talking about. We have some really great phones coming out, very cool. Okay, but it's kind of our first point of entry or one point of our big strategy of everything secure. That's the big strategy. And so phone is part of it. I mean, our phone is the most secure phone because of the way we make it and the software we had, both hardware and software. And so I would like to continue to do that. But if I can be successful in it, I'm okay to work with somebody else to do it.
BlackBerry's global smartphone market share peaked in 2009 at 21%. It's less than 1% now. IDC predicts BlackBerry market share is going to fall another 50% this year, down to 0.3% by 2018. Are you going to change the direction of that?
I hope so. Could I change it immediately? No. In many, many markets around the world, BlackBerry is still the preferred phone. I would admit the fact that in North America, with the banks, some of the hospitals and the governments, outside of that, we don't do very well. I do see people in professional world still using our devices. It's my job to recapture that interest and that loyalty. I think we have a shot at it.
In a future where chips are embedded everywhere in our clothes, in the walls, do smartphones matter? Do these numbers matter?
Smartphones will not matter on the long term. I think devices will matter. You know, how things talk to each other. The whole Internet of Things, if it's really real, it will be real. And the question is how and who's going to make money out of it. It's not clear whether it's the traditional handset people.
You sold Sybase to SAP. Are you going to sell BlackBerry too?
So there's a standard answer for public company officers.
Give me the non-standard answer.
The non-standard? I would prefer to build a lot of values before I even contemplate that.
But as the CEO, owe it to shareholders to consider offers,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's only fair. It's not only the shareholders, it's also the employees. The employees work hard. I mean, the one good thing I feel very proud of at Sybase is the people who slaved away with me for so long. Although selling to SAP was not my desired outcome, I was hoping to build a really big and strong company. But it was the right thing. You know, they gave us an offer that's very hard to refuse.
So if you got a good enough offer,
I got a good enough offer, I will.
What kind of offers have come across your desk?
No, I don't have any offers that
no?
come across my desk. I mean, if people would like to talk, I mean, talk's not an offer.
Would you sell to a Chinese company?
The answer is probably are unable to do that. One of our biggest install base is in the government. And so-called the Five Eye countries, where, you know, government share intelligence stuff. I think there will be a lot of regulatory issues and concerns, and I appreciate that.
What do you think of the current state of U.S.-China relations, given the new regime in China today?
I try to become a very constructive bridge between the two, if I can. I think the current status, U.S.-China relations is always full of challenges and opportunities.
When it comes to security and cybersecurity and the privacy of American citizens, who's more of a threat, China or the United States, to our own security?
I think everybody's spying everybody. I would think that it's equally a big threat inside our country as it is outside our country.
What the NSA has been doing, as far as we know, the recent revelations, fair or unfair?
If the intentions are truly for national security, I think it's fair. Because we don't want to do another setback. Now, this is only a personal view. I mean, this is not a BlackBerry view.
If the NSA wanted a back door to BlackBerry, would you open it?
We don't have back doors. And we wouldn't do that. From time to time, the government wanted information from us. Okay. First of all, we don't keep it around. That's number one. You need to know that, right? And if we do it, it have to be under.
Since you are the tech industry's turnaround guy, I'd like to ask you how you think some other turnarounds are going.
Okay.
Yahoo.
From what I could read, they seems to be doing reasonably well. Yahoo, they would look at it from the growth and, you know, the revenue and all that. Now, if the company guided that way is one thing, but the question really needs to focus on if the company fundamentally becomes stronger in the long term. And I think I'll focus on that. So from that perspective, feels like that they are doing the right thing.
So you think Marissa Meyer is doing a good job?
I think it's a reasonable job. I don't know her very well. I mean, I met a couple of times, but yeah, I believe so.
You're also a father. You have four kids.
Yes.
What kind of a parent are you?
I'm very close to my children, and I always enjoy with them. I don't spend a lot of time with them, unfortunately, and because of the job and the nature of the job, running around the world. But thank God they all grew up pretty good, you know, so I feel good about it.
How do they feel about you living half here, half Canada?
Oh, I think my wife love it. we've been married 34 years. You know, I think it's time that she doesn't want to see me every day. So it is good. If I go home early nowadays, she always say, what's wrong? You're not feeling well? I said, no, I just want to come home early. I'm serious. I'm not making any of this up. Anyway, they support me. And if I'm happy, they're just fine.
What's an app that you can't live without?
Email.
Facebook or Twitter?
Neither.
Why not?
I tried it. I got so hooked on it. I'm spending an entire living moment of my life on it. I can't do it. I need to stop.
Smartwatch or no?
No, I'm a traditionalist.
But you want your chips and everything.
Yeah, I'm still a traditionalist. By the way, I want a chip and everything. I didn't say I want to be tracked like that. Okay, I didn't say that. Okay, I think there's a certain amount of, there's a certain place of that, and then I wanted to have my own private moment in my private life.
If you weren't doing what you do now, what would you do? What would you want to do?
It will never happen again because I'm too old for it. I love to go to a law school. I actually want to be a lawyer at a certain point in my time, but my father thought it was not a good profession.
When is the last time you were nervous?
I'm very fortunate. I think if anything would happen to my family, I'll be nervous. Outside of that, there's nothing to be nervous about.
What's your guilty pleasure?
Cigar.
Okay.
Everybody, I love having a cigar. So one time I played golf with my doctor. I finished around, I pull out a cigar, and he looks at me and said, well, being your physician, I must advise you against this. And then I said, but I only smoke, you know, after I play golf or I'm having a drink with some friends and stuff. And he said, does it help your golf game? I said, not really, no. And he said, okay, fine.
You know, now that you've been doing this BlackBerry thing for almost a year, what do you give your own chances for success?
If you are talking about being able to create value, I think I could do that.
100%?
I'll say better than 80-20, how's that? I'm comfortable where the company is today with how we managed our technology, our businesses, the margin, the distribution channel, all the new product that's coming out, the strategy that kind of gets into communicating in secure manner of all stuff over time. I think there's enough runway here for us. And we scale our expenses to a level that now allow us to stay back, invest, and make money. So I'm comfortable with generating more value. Whether it's going to be good enough to be iconic again, okay, that's something that I need to chew on. I don't know the answer to that question.
Being completely honest, have you ever had a moment, a single moment, where you thought, what did I get myself into?
Twice. Not some one time. Yes, I had. After, like, the first 30 days, I said to myself, like, this is, you know, I'm running against time on so many things. But then I didn't dwell on it for too long. I stopped putting a plan together and recruited a team. I said, okay, just do one thing at a time. Just not try to fix everything at the same time. So that was once. And I could feel when I'm kind of like, my mind start, you know, not very focused, I could feel it. And right now I'm quite at ease with all the plans that we're working on.
How do you want to be remembered?
Somebody who could generate results. I'd like to remember in the future that I had done something that make a difference. A lot of people benefited from my effort. And if I could feel that, I'm good. I don't need to be called anything.
John Chen, thank you so much for joining us today on Studio One.